It's like real time. You have to pay attention. There's no emojis. What's the point of it? Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, smartphone addiction in millennials. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. I've got a funny article to talk about today.
Yeah.
But first, we have a little bit of housekeeping. I didn't tell Kelly this, so you might get a laugh.
Okay.
But I was listening back to your wonderful edit of last week's show and realized to my horror that I used an incorrect nerd term in the blockchain episode.
Oh.
Yeah. I almost wanted to have dear listener, see if you can find but it's just too, it would be too torturous.
Well, I didn't notice it, so.
Good. Maybe I should just keep my mouth shut. But
maybe you should.
I can't. So it was too embarrassing. So last week we were talking about blockchain, and in a torrent of words at one point, I quickly and casually, almost as an aside, referred to the hashing algorithm used to create the Merkle trees that, and I referred to it as H.264.
Oh, yes.
Instead of SHA-256. Which I've never actually said that out loud. I don't know if it's SHA or SHA-256.
Yeah, I think I've heard it pronounced SHA.
Yeah.
It's kind of like MySQL and MySQL.
Right.
You know, it's take your pick. It's not like GIF.
Which is clearly wrong.
Yeah, that's peanut butter.
Right.
Yeah, but yes, H.264 is a video format, not an encryption format.
Right, exactly. So, dear listener, apologies. I feel like I lost all nerd cred. I was horrified when I heard that. So, okay, so with that, I think it would be cool to have a 3D printer update.
Yes, a 3D printer update. The Monoprice Select Mini died roughly an hour after this podcast, recording the podcast last week. Yeah, it's the Z-axis limit switch went out on it, and which is, in the grand scheme of things, fairly minor and probably something we could have fixed and potentially even easily fixed, but it was 24 hours old, so back to Amazon for a refund it went.
Mm.
And
what is the symptom that occurs when your Z-axis switch is out?
When your switch is out, your printer does not stop lowering, your print head does not stop lowering on the Z-axis until it's painfully grinding into the metal of the print bed. That's pretty much what it sounded like. Yeah. Like, whoa, something's wrong here.
Suicidal 3D printer.
Yeah, we spent a couple of hours diagnosing and eventually we determined that either the switch was bad or something on the control board that received signal from the switch had gone bad. So we sent it back to Amazon, and I mean, you know, I have to say it didn't feel like a failed experiment, because in that time, yeah, it was a cheap $200 way to try out 3D printing. And I mean, you know, a $200 way that we got our money back on.
Mm.
So, I mean, it was a good printer for the price until it broke. And I'm not going to judge an entire product line based on one customer with one bad switch.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, when we replaced it, we didn't replace it with another Monoprice Select Mini. We decided to spend a couple hundred more dollars and upgrade to an Anycubic i3 Mega.
Mm.
Which is, it has a much larger build platform. I think it's 8.2 by 8.2 by 8 inches. So an 8-inch cube instead of a 4.5-inch cube print area. And
God, that's funny to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, and it just, it's a much more, I guess, just from the look and feel and the way it's constructed, a much sturdier and more robust printer. And it has a bed leveling assist and just all kinds of features that the Mini didn't have. And, you know, of course, it costs more, but it's still, for an under $500 3D printer, we're very pleased with it. And the print resolution can get much higher than the Monoprice Select Mini could. So we're able to get some really nice prints out of it.
Mm. How much of a financial concern is the filament? Do you think about it all the time, or do you never really think about it other than, uh-oh, we're almost out?
Well, you know, so far we still have a good chunk of our first spool of filament left. I mean, we're getting 1.5 kilogram rolls of filament for $18, and 1.5 kilograms it's actually a lot of plastic. And for the type of stuff we want to make, it'll pretty much probably last us a long time. I think we calculated calculated that we could get 50 or 60 pieces of our dungeon terrain that we're making out of it. And I've just printed a handful of items here. And I mean, it's, if you were doing a lot of big stuff, yeah, it would get expensive, but I don't know. We're not too worried about it. It doesn't seem prohibitively expensive.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering.
And you can go into your slicer software, and not only will it tell you how much plastic your print is going to need in terms of, how many meters off the spool and that sort of thing. If you go in and tell it the price you're paying for the spool of plastic, it will give you the cost of each print.
Nice. That's wild. It kind of, in a way, it reminds me of knitting. Eric has been knitting like a maniac for the last year. And it's the cost of the yarn is not insignificant when you think about it. Like, I have a newfound appreciation for why a cashmere scarf is $300. It's like the yarn alone is probably $150.
Right.
So it's like, oh, okay. So that's, I'm glad to hear that it's not a, it sounds kind of like when I use our laser printer, I really never think about the cost of the paper.
Right.
You know, I just think, oh, it's either we have a paper or we don't. And if I'm printing out, usually when I use the printer, it's pretty rare actually, but when I use it, it's because Cooper wants me to make some kind of like real world version of some in-game thing.
Mm-hmm.
So like Nuka-Cola from, I think it's BioShock or something. He likes the way the bottles look. So we'll take like a bottle of soda and peel off the label and print out like a label from a game and tape it on there.
Right, and make bottles of Nuka-Cola.
Yeah, exactly. And I never think about, I'm like, oh, I'm wasting paint. No, it's not even a consideration,
right,
really.
Right. I mean, well, we've had a couple of failed overnight prints.
Mm.
Wake up in the morning to this big wad of wasted plastic. Yeah. Yeah, we had a large
print. Printed a turd.
I printed a scribble. Yeah, we had a couple of failed overnight prints, neither of which were due to faults in the printer. They were kind of our own mix-ups of not understanding what we were doing properly, just being new to it and all.
Uh-huh.
And, it's not fun to wake up in the morning to this wad of wasted filament, but, I mean...
Yeah, no big deal.
It could add up quick if you were going crazy with the printing, but I'm not worried about it.
Yeah. Oh, it's interesting. Well, cool. To keep us posted. I'm so tempted just from like for nerd reasons to get one, but I know it would just sit there and would not get used. The kids would be the most interested in it. They would get excited about it, and then they would sit there and be like, oh, this is taking a long time.
Is it done yet?
Yeah, exactly.
Is it done yet?
Right.
Yeah.
Seems like you need to have adult levels of patience to really, really want one.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes it stretches those, but I've got, I've written blog posts about both printers, and we linked to one last week, and I'll link to the follow-up this week if people want to know more about it. And then this weekend I've got my first real build of 3D, my first real print project that's going to come together and be built.
Mm.
So
cool. Okay, shall we move on to the feature, such as it is?
Such as it is. Was there something else?
There was. We're going to talk about your house project.
Yeah,
that's fun. This is funny. So
the dream to hopefully soon come true.
Right. So you're planning on building a house.
Yeah, that's the eventual plan.
Yeah, but I don't know. It feels like there's this funny parallel between like the Thingiverse plans and like you. What was the name of the site where you guys get the house plans?
I think it was houseplans.com. Might have been homeplans.com. One of those two.
Yeah. So it's funny because, you know, dear listener, if you probably most people haven't thought about, building your own house. But yeah, you could just go online and get plans. And the ones that you shared with me were like, you know, they'll have typical sort of elevations of what the house would look like, and they're digital. I mean, they're not photos, of course.
Right. They're like architect renderings.
Right. But they're not interactive. It's really hard to determine the scale and get a sense of it. And I don't know. It's like you get a kind of an idea, but there's really a lot left to the imagination. And we were like, this would be the perfect scenario for VR.
Yes, it would, because you can look at a floor plan and go, oh, that bedroom's 11 by 12 and this room's 11 by 14 and or so. And the room I'm in now is 13 by 10. You can kind of compare and get ideas and stuff, but it's really hard to tell scale just by looking at a floor plan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we had this idea. of, why don't you take this floor plan and import it into Unity and then just build up walls off of it?
That's so cool.
Yeah, so then we can put on the HTC Vive and teleport around in there.
I love it. So how much work is that, though? I mean, is it something that's just totally unreasonable, but it's kind of funny, so he's doing it? Or is it not really that much work?
If you don't want to go into, like, fully detailed designing your house in VR, where you have your nice finishes and your chair rails and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you just want to throw some walls up just to get a sense of scale of the place, a couple hours.
Wow. That's way faster than I thought. Yeah, because that would be the thing I would be looking for, is to be able to just feel how the place flows.
Yeah. I mean, it's just extruding a bunch of rectangles, right?
Yeah. No big deal. I wouldn't have the foggiest idea of how to start with that. But the most important thing to us when we bought our house, we probably looked at 50 houses before we found the one that we're in now. And the biggest thing for me was, when we walked into the house we ended up buying, immediately it was like, I love this place because of the light.
Yeah.
And the thing that would scare me to death about building my own house is deciding how to orient it on the lot. So it'd be super fun with VR to, like, have the house and then have the, you know, have
the sun coming up.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And just keep turning the house in different directions and see which room's got the best light. Right. Like, just flipping the house around like it's on a giant Batman garage floor.
Yeah, it's like I know I have two requirements. I don't want the morning sunlight shining straight into my bedroom window, and I don't want the evening sunlight shining straight into my office.
Yep. Yeah, we anyway, it doesn't matter our light preferences, but I love the idea of I love the idea of being able to kind of experiment with it for virtually free, and I just think that's a cool application. A while back we interviewed Josh. Shoot, I'm forgetting his last name now. Sorry, Josh. I think it was Josh, but he has a site called Village Features 3D, where they do this for high-end home builders so that they don't have to do model homes, but they take it like beyond. Like, they'll mix real photography and illustrations and computer-generated stuff into the rendering so that it's super realistic.
Right. It's like, it's photorealistic VR tour, whereas we're just, it's some primitive objects.
More Minecraft-y. Cool. I'm glad remember to squeeze that in. I'm looking forward to seeing what that looks like.
Yeah, it'll be neat. And now I want to build the house in Minecraft. Now that you've said that.
Yeah, it's not a bad, actually, that would kind of give the same feel. Like, that
it
would give
would.
Me, yeah, if you've kind of, I don't know how big a Minecraft block is.
1 meter.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, of course it is. Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, except my house isn't going to have 1 meter thick walls, but.
Now you'd have to do it at like a 10x scale.
Yeah.
Something like that. Excellent. All right, should we move on to the feature?
Yes, let's, because this has been.
Yeah. That's a longer waffle than expected.
Yeah, yeah. Large waffles.
Now I'm hungry. Large waffles. Well, Kelly, you will be shocked to learn of a surprising new study that found millennials prefer digital communication. Many even check their phones once per night. Scientists know why, but do we really understand the benefits?
We really understand the incredibly obvious benefits?
Yeah. Water still wet, like you said. So, okay, so this is stemming from an article in Inc. magazine, or Inc. on Inc.com, that is obviously aimed at boomers, because it is so ridiculously obvious that I think the only interesting thing about it is that someone chose to publish it at all. It's kind of alarming to me.
It's really weird, isn't it?
Yeah, like it of course. You know, it's written from the perspective of a boomer, although the guy doesn't look that old. And it's that classic, like, kids today, you know, they don't know how to have a conversation. They're just like loners.
Technology's ruining our lives.
Yeah.
Not, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, you know, I don't know if you have to be a boomer. I have seen a lot of message boards posts and things on parenting forums about, oh, my teenager doesn't have any friends. All they do is sit in the room and play on Xbox Live all day, or or stare at their phone all day. They don't go out and socialize. My kid doesn't have friends.
Yep. Wrong.
Yeah.
One of the things that really made me laugh was that the writer says, a surprising stat from last year found that millennials check their phone 150 times per day. And I was like,
and we were surprised that it was that low.
Yeah, exactly. I probably checked my phone 500. I don't even know what check your phone means anymore.
Yeah. What does it mean? Does it mean pick it up and do something on it? Or does it mean just look at it and see if you have any new notifications or things?
Right. I mean, my phone, and this is like, look, I agree that there is an addictive property. And, you know, there have been studies that show that things like Facebook likes and Instagram comments and that sort of thing release like micro levels of dopamine, which creates this sort of loop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a downside, you know, but there's a huge, I think, obviously, a huge upside to the you know, the connection. Yeah. And it's like, it's just so get off my lawny. But the fact that this, it's kind of scares me that I hope a lot of people like that this was, this article is targeted at were like, you know, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Like, duh. But there were a couple of interesting, I thought there were a couple of interesting things that came out of it. One being that the Inc. article talking about this study links to, you know, a surprising stat from last year found out that millennials check their phone 150 times per day. Can you believe that? But then when you click through that article, and this is classic internet media sort of hand waving. When you click through that article, it's about the fact that adults are more addicted to their phone than millennial adults. Boomers are more addicted to their phones than millennials. That's the whole point of the other article.
It just happens to mention the stat.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And the stat and what the other article is about is like, you know, before you, you know, every time you hear an adult or yourself, I keep saying adult as if millennials aren't adults. But so, you know, 18 to 32 year olds, if you're older than that, like me, for example, if I say like, oh, these kids today, they're just in Snapchat all day. It's like, oh, yeah. How much time do you spend in email, dude?
Yeah.
Because adults, I keep doing it. I don't know what to call them. Old farts like me are super addicted to email. I mean, like crazy. And there was what was the stat I pasted into the chat of
My emo clients never closed.
Right? Like I have plugins on my email to prevent me from being able to check it or from it sending me notifications because email is the worst.
Yeah, it is. And I believe your stat was the 6% of people that checked their email while their spouse was in labor. Yeah. And 10% that checked it during a funeral.
Right. But these kids today, they are addicted to Snapchat.
Yeah.
In labor. Hold on, honey. I got to check my email.
Yeah. Just got to reply to the boss real quick.
Honey, hold that thought. Just be right with you. Oh, man. 60% of adults check their work email while on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does this surprise anyone? No. I think the Inc. article is sort of disingenuous in that they're referencing this other article that's kind of like, you know, that it's really the kids are no worse than their parents. Oh, so funny.
Yeah, it's, you said the interesting part is that we had to have a study about it. And I feel like the purpose for the study wasn't that we want to actually get some information because this seems kind of like a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the purpose was to maybe convince the older crowd that this is okay or that this is happening. And one of the first things the study says is that millennials feel like this addition of technology has improved their relationships, whereas the older generation feels like it damages the relationships.
Right. Which it does make sense because odds are high that the adult, or let's say the parent, let's say parents, children, the parents are not in the loop of, they're not in the communication loop. So they actually are being shut out, even though the kid's right there.
Right. And the parents may be using technology as much, but they're using it in different ways that maybe aren't as connected.
Yeah. Like email and phone calls.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, does that count? I wonder if that counts. Does that count if you make a phone call? Is that checking your phone? I almost feel like it doesn't.
It's like, no one uses their phone for phone calls.
Oh, man. I have some colleagues and friends who just refuse to not get off the phone thing. They just can't.
Yeah, it's like I have friends that I talk to on the phone, but before I call them, like, we're scheduling it ahead of time through chat.
Yeah.
Because phone calls are just...
They're so rude.
They're so disruptive. Yeah, like, yeah. Like, just randomly, there are very few friends that I would just randomly pick up the phone and call just because it feels rude. It's such an interruption.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because I've worked with clients that will point to their... look, our customer service is so great. We call people, you know, in these touch, you know, these touch points, like people signing mm-hmm. up and people completing their first thing. And I don't want to go into exactly what I'm talking about, but the idea is they're like, oh, they spend a lot of money to do it, to have people that are, you know, it's not that the people aren't nice. They're super nice. It's not spammy. Okay. It's a little salesy. They're trying to upsell people and stuff, or even if they aren't, they're trying to deepen their brand ties and all that. I mean, there's a business outcome mm-hmm. that they're going for.
Right.
And it's such a waste. It's so wrongheaded. It's like you are interrupting your customers' lives with something that is not important.
Right. Like I genuinely appreciate when I'm having a problem with something and I can schedule a phone call with a company.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can pick up the phone on my time during their business hours and call and talk to someone.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I appreciate being able to do both of those so much. But I have actively avoided paying for services that I probably otherwise would have bought because they have just randomly called me at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, hey, we just wanted to say hi and thank you for becoming a customer. You called me for that?
Yeah.
I was changing the baby.
I was having dinner with my family.
Yeah. Right. It's so... if my phone rings, it's either spam or an emergency.
Right.
And... to just be like, and for that phone to ring and to pick it up and have it be like, hey, it's Sarah. Just wanted to thank you for, oh, wow. Wow. Because then you're in this, like, you're in this horrible situation where a nice person who works at a company that you use.
And who's just doing their job.
And who's just doing their job is now on the phone with you. Because if it's a telemarketer, I just hang up without thinking about it.
Yeah.
And they're all robocalls now anyway. They're not real people anymore anyway. So you pick it up. If it's, there's like dead air, just hang it back up. But if it's actually, you know, this nice person who's from your bank or whatever, you don't want to just hang up on them. I mean, they have access to your bank account, but you know what I mean? So it's super awkward.
Yeah. You don't want to be rude, but at the same time, just you want to be left alone to do your thing.
Yeah. I'm angry.
I don't know, maybe we're the only ones who feel this way about phone calls, but
no, I know we're not. I know that there is a generation because I talk to people about it. I know that this is it's pretty common. I think for my age, I think digitally I'm a little younger than my real age. I know I am because a lot of people sort of like kids I graduated from high school with, they do have that mm-hmm. kind of like, why don't people talk to each other anymore? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think digitally you're probably closer to my age.
Yeah. I agree. But anyway, I just shake my head when they're like, oh, we invested in this call center so we can proactively reach out for customers during important touch points. And I'm like, don't, please stop. Don't do that.
Yeah, stop. Don't.
And it's like, okay, maybe do that with your, and they'll be like, no, people love it. They tell us all the time they love it. I'm like, yeah, how old are those people?
Right.
That is the aging end of your demographic that you need to replace with, you know, whatever.
And the rest are just being polite.
Yeah. And they're it's just infuriating. I'm not, obviously, you know, some people might like it, but it's just not the way communication works anymore. Like I haven't talked to Erica on the phone in years. The only time I can think of when we talked was maybe a year or two ago when I was at a conference. I think we did like a FaceTime or Skype or something to say goodnight to the kids or something like that.
Yeah.
But like my mother-in-law, she's all about the phone. She's like, she'll take out the phone, put it on speakerphone while she's driving, put it on the dashboard of the car and just be talking like you know, it's like, what? I can't hear you. It's like all I hear is road noise. It's just funny.
Yeah. It's like I assign levels of priority. And like you said, like text message is semi-important, would like a reply soon. Phone call is, this is an emergency, or it's something we've scheduled ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an appointment. I mean, that's a phone call is like a meeting, you know, it's like real time. You have to pay attention. You can't do five things at once or, you know, wait, you know, 10 minutes to get back or whatever.
I can't edit my reply.
Yeah. There's no emojis. What's the point of it? Oh man. So the thing about the Inc. article, maybe this guy's actually on our side. He probably is, because he closes the article with a sort of a suggestion that old farts like me just get used to it, kind of like this, just, it's right. not going away. Stop complaining about it. If you have some need of developing a relationship with folks in that younger age group, it means you're going to be using Slack. You know, you're not going to be in meetings as much. It means that you're going to get texts at weird times. It's just it's like a fundamental shift in the way business communication is. And, you know, obviously it's a business article, of course, being an Inc. Right. But the author does admit that millennials are actually way ahead of the older generation, which I 100% agree with, because there are the benefits for me far outweigh the downsides. You know, the instant, you know, it's instant but asynchronous, which is just super convenient. Anyway,
yeah. If I want to leave a message for you at 2 o'clock in the morning, I can do that, and you'll see it the next morning.
Yeah, right. It's up to
It's up to the person receiving to say, okay, I don't want to be bothered right now. I'm going to turn off all the things.
Yeah.
And I do that.
Yeah. I mean, I did maybe a year ago go through what for me felt like a purge, like a digital cleansing.
Yeah, exactly.
Where I actively, and you have to keep up with it, because if you install new apps, they automatically default to certain notifications being on. Even badges drive me crazy. So I just routinely go through my notifications settings on my phone and make sure that really only the ones that I do want to be interrupted by, which pretty much amount to Slack and my calendar. That's about it. And everything else just can't notify me. No badge, no nothing. Yeah. No notifications. And that has dramatically improved my ability to focus on something longer than like 30 minutes, you know, because you just, like when you have a programming task or you're trying to write something and you really need to get into it and focus and drill down, if your phone or whatever is binging every 60 seconds, it's really hard.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's definitely true, but you can control it and you should, but... You know,
yeah, exactly. There are days where I just like, okay, I'm gonna stay off of Slack, or I'm gonna put my phone in airplane mode.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Airplane mode is your friend. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show before, but I use a thing on my email called Inbox Pause. It only works with Gmail, but if you have Gmail, it's amazing. You install this plugin and you pause your inbox. And what it does is it sets up a filter that takes all incoming email, it puts it in a temporary folder, skips your inbox, which means that nothing goes into your inbox while it's paused, and you can set it, you know, for time windows, you know. And so once or twice a day, it'll take all the email from this sort of hidden folder and move it back in my inbox. And since it skips over the inbox, it automatically doesn't notify, you know, the 5 or 10 different Gmail applications that I have floating around.
Right.
So I don't have to go in multiple places and jockey the notification settings for Gmail. I just, you know, pause my overall account, basically.
Yeah, and it's there when you want to check it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if you want to, like, that's a good idea too, because even I don't have, and this is maybe a personal failing that I wish I had corrected, but it's too late now. I don't have a separate work email and personal email.
Oh.
And sometimes when I do go on vacation or whatever, I'll want to check my personal email.
Mm-hmm. That's funny.
And I don't want to see work email.
Right. So here's a funny thing.
Set up filters.
Mm-hmm. I also have just one email. I mean, I have a few, but they all forward into the same central one.
Right.
But I have absolutely no personal communications in there anymore. So there's like no reason for me to check. If I'm on vacation, there's no reason for me to check my email, because all of the personal communications happen through, in my case, Facebook Messenger, but it could be it could be anything.
Yeah. Well, there's really only one person that I communicate, that I have personal communications with via email. Mm. But usually if I'm going on vacation, it's because I'm going to visit that person. So being able to get in touch with them en route is useful.
Yeah.
But
yeah. So, but yeah, filters are your friend, I suppose.
Yeah. Filters are my friend, or that's the point at which we start texting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the notifications thing is definitely a problem. Like notification overload is bad, but that's a different thing than proactively checking your phone 150 times a day or 500 or however many times it
is. However many times. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I really get the part about saying how this technology has improved their relationships just because I see it so much and I've experienced it so much myself. I mean, I'm trying to think of the number of meaningful friendships I have that didn't first start as talking to someone online.
Mm.
And I think that number is 2.
That's crazy. I mean, it's not crazy. Yeah. It's not, because that's like, that's what the internet's great at. It's like finding, it's great for birds of a feathering, you know, like you live in a small town.
I do.
How many people there do you think have a 3D printer and play D&D?
Right. Right. I mean, let's be honest. I am a liberal atheist living in the Bible Belt in a small town. So, you know.
Yeah. Right. So what are you going to do? You're going to go online. That's like, I think.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's pros and cons to everything. But that level of connection, the ability, it's great. And it's super social. It's incredibly social. It's too social almost.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to complain. Yeah, if you're going to complain about it, the potential for it to be too social.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you and I met. That's how you and I started working together. We didn't meet in person first at some coffee shop and decide, okay, this is a thing. Mm-hmm. No, my other good friend, Josh, who I also met online, saw an advertisement you had placed and sent it to me because he knew I was looking for work.
Mm. Oh, that's funny. I didn't even remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, now that you said the thing about, you know, 2 IRL friends, right around. I mean, like, the people who I see in person on a regular basis is no one. I mean, I don't meet up with, other than obviously my family.
Right.
Karate, I guess, twice a week. But we're not friends. Like, we don't go hang out. I mean, I'm friends with them, obviously, but yeah, we just go to this class. And so, you know, and that's it. It's like class over. We're out. Like, maybe occasionally somebody will send a text message like, hey, can you tell somebody I'm going to be late or something like that? But I don't think it would hurt anybody's feelings to hear that I wouldn't, you know, we're not close. Let's put it that way.
Right.
So it's funny. I've been going back and forth with a colleague about trying to find a time in the schedule to have coffee. Like, he's one of those, let's have coffee people. Mm-hmm. And we can't do it. We've gone for a month and we can't find a time when both of us are available. You know, it's sort of in the morning at the same time. It just doesn't.
Well, maybe I should warn you now that at some point this fall, I'm coming up that way again and it will probably include a trip to Rhode Island.
Cool. So. Check out the digs, the office. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great. But yeah, it takes planning though. Like, it needs to be planned in advance because, I don't know, it's like, but I interact with people constantly, hundreds of people constantly, but hundreds is probably an exaggeration, but in a given day, I will definitely interact with like at least 30 people that I do so on a regular basis. More than 30. It's more than 30. Like, if you count Slack rooms, email, teleconferences, Zoom meetings, stuff like that. Almost none of them have I ever even met in person. Never mind, hung out with, but I would consider us extremely close. Like I know I know detailed information about their finances and family and, you know, that's just the new way. I think it doesn't seem less real to me.
No, it doesn't.
Anyway. So you can, this is like turning into a longer waffle than planned. Of course.
Right.
Can't shut up. But if you've got oldsters in your life, you can forward this episode to them and we'll slap some sense into them. here's the mom, stop calling me. This is the not stop mom, stop calling me episode. get on Facebook Messenger for crying out loud. So we can talk like normal people, not savages.
Nice. That's probably a good place to wrap it up. Cause yeah, this is the,
sorry.
We thought, oh, we'll do a brief episode, but no, it's once you get into it.
It's another 45 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. We can waffle about anything for up to an hour.
Yeah, exactly. This is basically my weekly phone call.
Mm-hmm. Your weekly social interaction.
Right. My real-time social interaction.
Yeah. Yeah, it is me. Aside from the Saturday phone call with dad, this is pretty much it.
Nice. All right. That's enough. Horse dead, beaten, gone and forgotten.
Yep.
That's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.
Would you like to see Kelly and I in your inbox once a week? If you haven't paused it. Get new episodes delivered straight to you with show notes, links to additional content, and oh so much more. Plus, you can reply to any message to suggest topics for future episodes. To get the inside track, go to terrifyingrobotdog.com and look for the Keep Me in the Loop button. That website again is terrifyingrobotdog.com.